stronger.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Sith Council here on SEN. I am Christian Harloff. Thank you for joining us today on the show. Very happy to have you. Appreciate it. If you didn't already know, we're doing a show here from 9 to 10, and then right afterwards, we're going to be doing a stereo after show on stereo.com/Christian Harloff. So if you haven't downloaded that app, please do it. It's free. You can ask a bunch of questions. Joining me today, as always, on the Sith Council, Steph Sabraw, Mike Kalinowski. There they are, ladies and gentlemen. Guys, short news week this week, and we'll probably take a bunch of super chats. So if you guys have questions you want to ask, you can throw them in there, and I'm going to screenshot them. We'll get to them at the end. But we have some topics, but it's been it'll just be a short discussion. But how's everybody doing? Steph, how are you doing?
Good. Good. It's been a good week. I feel like last week I was just in those quarantine blues. You know how some weeks just hit you and then the other weeks you feel alive again? I'm feeling alive again.
Good. I'm happy to hear. It's funny because it seems like a lot of people are at their breaking point. So the fact that you not me. Yeah. And Mike, you're doing good. Your camera's having a rough day, but you're doing all right. Oh, you're muted again. That's all right. It's not a Sith Council show unless Mike has a. Oh, you know what? That's me. That's
You muted me. I'm here. Yeah.
Do you understand how much I wish I had that button in life, Mike?
The mute button
for you? Yes.
For me?
Just for you?
Just for you?
Just for me?
Yes.
Are we allowed to swear on this show? Because I'll swear right now.
No, you can't.
What's the matter with you? Just for me? Please.
It's a social media mute button. All right, let's get to some of these. We have a lot to talk about, and I'm pretty like I said, it's short news day, but there is a lot to talk about inside of the short stories that we do indeed have. And as you saw, there was this. I was watching this interview that Ewan McGregor gave, and it's pretty. And by the way, these stories, they're aggregated by our great friends over at Star Wars News Net. If you didn't already know about them, you should check them out. They don't just do take stories from all over the world about Star Wars. I mean, they do that, obviously, and that's how I get my news. But they have a lot of great scoops that they break. They have a great podcast, the Resistance Broadcast, which we just announced. We're going to have I'm bummed because I wanted all three of them in the league. James Bainey, I think, got. I was bummed that he didn't get drafted, but I think that he'll wind up playing in the first class league. But Lacey and John are coming on over to the Schmodown, so we're excited about that. But the Star Wars News Net team is great, and the site is great, and this is where I have been checking out a lot of my news for years. Star Wars, Obi-Wan Kenobi. This is Eddie Izzard was interviewing McGregor, and the bottom line is it's just a great kind of conversation that he had. And the stuff that I got out of this was just Ewan McGregor talking about, look, we start shooting in the end of spring. We're going to be shooting in spring, and we're shooting in Los Angeles. Everybody's talking about a shooting in Boston or in Boston, England, but no, we're shooting in LA. It's the same spot where they shoot The Mandalorian, the same technology. And no, Favreau's not involved in this one. This is Deborah Chow. She directed two episodes. We're excited about it. And he also went on to talk about how he's really pumped up to he always thought there was a story to tell there in between the time of when he played Obi-Wan to the end of Sith, leading up to Alec Guinness's version of Obi-Wan. So this is exactly what that is. And he also said this is kind of an old school kind of TV Western. So all of these comments get me pretty hyped up. What do you say, Steph? What do you think about these comments, and how do you feel about Obi-Wan?
I love that he's so excited to portray this role again. You know, it's been so long, and it makes me excited when an actor is excited to get back into it. And I'm really excited about them using the technology. I think it really worked for The Mandalorian. Although it's cool to film on location and get that different set, I do think that worked, and I wouldn't see why you would go away from that when it really, really worked for The Mandalorian.
Not to say, I mean, if you look at what Robert Rodriguez did, they did go on location at some points if it was right. And because it's a lot of it is going to be on Tatooine, you drive out to Vegas, you know, and you camp out there and you do a bunch of stuff there if you have to, and you figure out how to do it. So I'm pretty pumped for it too, because it's a very different situation. Even Ewan McGregor was talking about it. It's not like when it's just a bunch of green screen. You see it. The actor feels like they're in an environment. If you watched any of that stuff from the Mandalorian gallery series, even when there was that one shot from when the Mandalorian was kind of looking out into the water and they showed the behind the scenes, and it just the way that this technology works, it puts the actor in that space where you're like, okay, I can feel it. I can be there. Mike, as an actor, like, do you like this, this technology that they come up with? Do you understand why the actors are responding to this more so than like the green screens?
I think so. I mean, a great example of that is the prequels. I mean, you look at like someone like Ewan McGregor or Liam Neeson, who are, they can create the world around them without those green screens. And then there's some actors that are great actors, but in Star Wars films, they're just, you're like, oh, what's wrong with them? Why aren't they, but the acting is awful with them. What are they doing? Mm-hmm. It's that, you know, it's that mentality of some actors. It's just the imagination is there and your mind creates it. You don't need, you know, if you're looking at someone and you're looking at the two dots above his head and you can imagine what the alien looks like, other people are like, well, that's an actor with two dots. I can't get into this. I think Ewan McGregor is so good. I think that's one of the reasons why he's so good in the prequels is it doesn't matter. So to see him and to know in this world, I just, you know, he's just one of the things that love or hate the prequels, love or hate him, no matter who you are, what you love about him. Everyone could agree he's the bright spot of those films. So
absolutely. People are
more
very
of that. It's win-win.
Absolutely. And people were very excited to hear that he was coming back and that was the thing when I think it was just difficult when they tried to do Solo, because whether or not, I mean, like I said, and I just to reiterate, I think that that Alden did a great job as far as acting went. I just didn't, it just didn't feel like the character right. that Han Solo, and not that, oh, he's not Harrison Ford. It just seemed like a different character.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean he was a bad actor. It just means
it wasn't a bad actor all in the film.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And the uphill battle that he had was that it was just an uphill battle. And the thing was, when you look at him, you're like, well, I got to accept this guy. But we've already seen Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan.
Right.
We already know that he understands it. This isn't like, oh, okay, this is Ewan McGregregor coming in here trying to be Alec Guinness. I said McKinnick because I did it last time. Alec Guinness.
It would be if they were doing this young Obi-Wan series or whatever, and McGregor couldn't do it for whatever reason, you know, or didn't want to go to TV or whatever, and they brought a different actor in. The battle that this guy would have to face, like, would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, if he just said, Ewan was like, nah, I'm not doing TV. I'm not doing the character anymore. I'm done with it. But they still wanted to go forward, and they just cast someone and made him kind of look at like, oh man, I would not envy that at all.
It would be tough. It would be tough to do. They probably would, you know, after what went down with Solo, they probably wouldn't do it. And that's probably why they're very hesitant to do Solo Part 2. And it has nothing to do with him. He's a great actor. And a lot of people liked what he did with Solo.
Yeah, they are.
I don't think it was him as much as it was the direction that not even from Ron Howard, but the way that they portrayed it. It just seemed a little bit more to me of like, so it's like, well, you know, he's eventually going to turn into that guy. It's like, no, you always had, I've always been sarcastic. I just didn't figure it out one day. Like my confidence built up over years, but I was still there.
And I think the thing is with Solo, cause like a lot of people that people wanted young Solo, we thought we were going to see like 18-year-old Solo. This is a guy at the end of the film. He's like, I'm hearing this guy on Tatooine's got a job. It's like, what is this? A couple of years before New Hope? Like,
it's like 8 or 10 years or something.
Yeah, I was like, I was like, the age was weird and
But what I would be okay with, I'll be honest, is if they decide, because there were rumors going around for a bit that the Crimson Dawn series was going to happen, and I still think it's a brilliant idea for a series. Kind of like the crime gangster. Maybe that this is where they go with Boba Fett. I don't know, but maybe they decided that instead of doing the Crimson Dawn, they were going to go with Boba. But I think that
I
think maybe, but they also, it's just, they have so much talent there. If they wanted to use Kira again, they could use Kira and get Khaleesi herself to get her to come back, you know. And I thought she was really good in the movie also. I thought the performances in Solo were actually really good. But anyway, I think that you could still do that. Obviously, you could bring Sam Witwer back as Darth Maul if you wanted to. And there is, I don't know, there's a lot to be there, to happen there. And I also think I'd be cool with him coming back as Solo and maybe giving it another shot, because at that point he'd be able to have a little more fun with it. And we've already accepted him in one movie. I'm not by any means going to be like, oh, this guy's back at Solo. No, I'm not, not at all. I just hope he gets better direction from and I don't want to, and that's not to take anything on Ron Howard.
Right. No, it was just,
you know what I mean? It's just like the way that they decided to go with the character. I'd like to see him get another crack at it, but not with the weight of the world on his shoulders. And
him to
show up in an episode, because I think that the fans look at Hayden Christensen, right? Hayden Christensen, when he was in, everybody, when they announced Hayden Christensen back in Obi-Wan, people lost their minds. People were like, yes, he's back.
Oh, yeah.
He got so much crap from fans and how wooden of an actor he was and how bad he was. And again, not his fault, a lot of the stuff that he had to deliver in the direction that he was given. This is him getting another crack at it because the weight of the world is not on his shoulders now. We're waiting. And when he shows up, the audience is going to go, oh my God, there he is. Boom. Yeah. Whether it's a flashback, whether it's him in the suit, whatever it might be, we're going to be pumped waiting for it. I think they can do the same thing with Solo and just say, you know, all right, here we go. Where is he? Oh, look, he just showed up. Oh, that's cool. That was a cool scene the way they used him, and make us want him more. Does that make sense to you guys?
Sure. Yeah, I think also with him, he was working with Lord Miller for so long developing the character, and then that's all gone the minute they didn't like what they were seeing. But, you know, he kind of had to pivot and make do with what he could do, you know, what a different director wanted. So, yeah, I agree.
Steph?
Yeah, I didn't love that movie for a lot of reasons, but it wasn't first and foremost his portrayal of Han. So that's not, I wouldn't be upset to see him again. I do like the comparison you draw with Hayden. It's hard to understand when you're not in the industry how much of an actor's portrayal of a character relies on the direction that they've been given.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes they make bold decisions, but there has to be a whole team that is okaying that. So it's not fair to judge the entire actor on the portrayal.
Agreed. This came out, by the way, this morning. That this is from comicbookmovie.com, and there was an interview with Hal. He was the ILM animation director, Hal Hickel. He recently shared a series of behind the scenes photos from the set of Rogue One. There's one in particular that grabbed the attention of fans, and that was Darth Vader was a highlight in the movie, with each of his scenes serving as standout moments. There is one that didn't make the cut, and I haven't even gone through this. I think I know which one it is, because there's a shot in the trailer where he's like standing in front of, like, it looks like he's on a ship and he's staring at some kind of plans, but they never showed that. But let's see if that's the case. After sharing the shot of Vader below, Hickler responded to a fan by explaining that the Sith Lord was originally set to meet with Grand Moff Tarkin. Unfortunately, couldn't remember the dialogue and revealed that it was scrapped because it didn't fit into the direction of the story, where the story went. This could be a result of reshoots, as much as said was believed to have been an extensive round of additional photography over the years. And then Mads Mikkelsen shared his take on those reshoots. Some of it was a little chaotic. There was no secret. There was some rewriting in the script while we were doing it. And when you do that, it's obviously very tricky for the actors to know. What am I carrying into this room now? I opened the door. I'm not back to what happened before. So there was some of that. Having said that, it always did feel like a solid story. That is the shot, by the way, the Vader shot that I was talking about. A young girl lost who doesn't know where she belongs in the world. Then an Oppenheimer story unfolds. She always heard that Galen was this, and then she realizes he was that. And it was quite beautifully written. At the end of the day, the changes that were in the film were not as dramatic as people talk about. It was tweaks, but obviously if you do it while you're working, it can be confusing. So, I mean, there was, and this is the Vader picture right there. Well, I don't have that anymore, but the Vader picture, is right over here. That's kind of what they showed in the trailer at that one point. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, all right, we see the Rogue One. We hear the Rogue One stuff. You guys, when you hear this, I mean, there was a lot of talk when all that was going down, and it's funny because that was like the start. Star Wars was still in super positivity mode by the time that movie was coming around the bend, you know, and then there were all these reshoot stuff, and people were like, oh, this movie's going to be in trouble, it's going to stink. They have to bring in Tony Gilroy to fix it. Oh man, this is going to be terrible, but then it makes $1 billion and people stop talking about that. And people actually like Rogue One a lot. I happen to really like Rogue One. I like it more and more every time I watch it. It just, to me, fits into the overall storyline. I think one of the best ones that they've done when you look at the overall tone of Star Wars. But with the reshoots, it makes sense. Reshoots happen in movies. We know that. These were a little bit more maybe reported on because it's Star Wars. But Steph, you know, when you hear the first reports again that Matt says, yeah, it was chaotic that we had to figure it out, but it happens and the story was always there. Does that still give you more confidence inside of Rogue One? Do you like Rogue One? And then second, do you still think you would have liked to seen that Vader scene and like him talking to Tarkin?
Yeah, I loved Rogue One. I think it's one of the best Disney-made Star Wars films, and I do think that they totally get the tone. It's interesting because for me, every time I hear about reshoots or director change or big like drama happening behind the scenes, I get really worried because it oftentimes, like with Solo you saw, it doesn't land well, you know, it doesn't land perfectly. It's not like a perfect 10, and I'm not saying Rogue One is, but it kind of gives me hope that like there is a way to do it. You know, mistakes can be made along the way, changes need to be made, but if you're malleable and communicative with the team, things can happen. In regards to the Vader scene, Vader in Rogue One was the sickest part, one of the sickest scenes in Star Wars, period. So, of course, I would have liked to see more. But I do think we're going to get Vader in the Cassian Andor series. And I do think we have Vader. Yeah, I think we're going to get Vader and Tarkin, maybe Orson Krennic too. I do think that, especially now that we know K2SO won't be in most of the first season, right, if at all, I do think we're going to get that, which would be dope.
Well, it's very interesting that you bring that up because that's my big concern with the Cassian Andor series in general is that I just think we've seen so many shows about the rebellion or here. I mean, shoot, we had Rebels that was 5 or 6 seasons, whatever it was. And I would like to see both sides. One of my favorite books that I've talked about in nausea is Lost Stars. What I liked about Lost Stars so much, and what I liked about a lot of these, some of the comics and the books, that they show both sides of the Empire. And they did a little bit of Rebels too. They show like they're, I mean, hell, Wedge was part of the Empire and then left. So I want to see more of that. I want to see the side of the Empire. I want to see, I think Krennic is a great idea. Anytime you can get Ben Mendelsohn, please, please, mm-hmm. please, please. And yeah. So anyway, this is something for sure that I think that's a great idea. I'd love to see it. Mike, what do you think about all this?
Yeah, I guess on board like with Steph says, like Rogue One is one of my favorite films, period, of Star Wars. Like I said, the more I watch, the more I love it. I think for me, the less is more when it comes to established characters. Like I didn't need Tarkin as much in that film. Like when you got Ben Mendelsohn, like he carries a film as a villain. I think Vader could have been used less. Like,
oh wow.
I'm of two minds of that last scene. Like I do love it because it's so cool leading to what it leads to, but I know that was added in. Like that was not part of the original script.
But he was, from what I heard though, Mike, so you know, like from the original script, what I heard initially, again, all hearsay, but from what I heard initially was that Vader was always in it. They just changed it, and Vader initially killed everybody. He killed, main cast.
Okay, see, that last scene of leading up to the Tantive IV and stuff like that. Yeah, that was all. Yeah. That was changed.
Yeah, that was but the reason why, from, and again, I don't know how true this is, but from what I heard, that he killed everybody, including Felicity Jones and everyone.
Oh, wow.
And it was so dark, and it was because when Felicity Jones and Diego Luna die, it reminded me of what's that, the one, shoot, the one with Morgan Freeman and it's the,
oh,
Strawshank?
No, it's the the shoot, somebody's exactly gonna tell me, you know what I'm saying? It's not Armageddon, but the other one.
Deep Impact.
Thank you.
What's his name? The Italian actor in Tia Leone.
Tia Leone
Maximilian Schnell.
Okay, yeah, and they're sitting on the beach. It reminded me of that. It absolutely reminded me of Deep Impact. And when it happens in Deep Impact, you're like sad but peaceful. When it happens in Rogue One, you're like sad but peaceful. They won. If they would have gotten wiped out by Vader, as cool as it might have been, and you're like, oh, that's what this guy. You left the theater going, oh man, what a rough ending for that character.
Yeah.
So, but I understand why they changed it.
Yeah, but you knew, and I think going into it, everyone was like, well, this is going to be. We know they're dying. We know they're, because we don't see these characters ever again.
Right.
Like we knew the end result, but like, how do we get there? That's the story, and it still was.
Oh, dude, I got so much crap for saying that when I was on Jedi. that everybody was going to die. I was like, they're all,
of course, and they're going to die.
They're like, oh, you don't know that. I'm like, where are they? Like, you don't necessarily have to see them. I mean, I guess not. But what are you going to?
Yeah, if they're the biggest thing, if they get the plans for the Death Star, of course we're going to see them or hear about them again.
Yeah,
come on now.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, so that's that was an interesting story. That one came out this morning that I saw, and that was from again comicbookmovie.com, excuse me. And now we're going to move on. We're going to go to our next story, and we're going back to Obi-Wan. And here's another story that is so Chung-Hoon Chung reportedly is serving as the cinematographer for Obi-Wan Kenobi, the Disney Plus series. And it's scheduled to be, obviously, we know that it's going next month. It's scheduled to begin filming next month, is what they say. But even though heard a little bit different from Ewan McGregor. So Deborah Chow is directing the series. And now, according to reports out of South Korea, Chung-Hoon Chung will be serving as a cinematographer. The report comes from the South Korean news website, Sina21, has not been confirmed by Lucasfilm. Chung is an accomplished and award-winning cinematographer. He shot The Handmaiden. He also shot Old Boy, Hotel Artemis, Zombieland, Double Tap, the upcoming Edgar Wright movie Last Night in Soho, and 2022's Uncharted. So if the report is accurate, again, this is from Star Wars News Net, if the report is accurate, he's going to be the first Korean cinematographer ever in Star Wars history. Ewan McGregor confirmed the series will be utilizing the volume technology that is being used for The Mandalorian, and this will likely be Chung's first time using the state-of-the-art digital environments, but the newness of it didn't seem to have any effect on the crew of The Mandalorian. By all accounts, from interviews, the technology has actually enhanced the way in which live-action series can be shot by allowing cinematographers to see everything realized in camera, as clarified by Favreau in the Disney Gallery series. They checked to Lucasfilm, and there was no one gave me any confirmation yet. But this one to me seems very realistic. It seems, and how cool would it be to get this guy to shoot Obi-Wan? Are you kidding me? Like, this would be a phenomenal. Old Boy. I mean, this would be great.
Was it said like Old Boy? Was it the remake with Spike Lee or the original? I'm assuming it's the original.
I assume it's the original.
From his other filmography. I'm like, I think this is the original. I should be able to look this up right now. But,
and even though people give Old Boy, the Spike Lee one, crap, because why was it remade? It still was shot pretty cool.
No, it still looked great. Yeah. Still shot pretty cool. Why are they remaking such a great film?
Yeah. But that's a different story. But the way that it looked, and again, I don't know which one he shot. I'm sure someone will tell us pretty soon. But either way, this is great news. I love this. I hope this comes to be. I also think that one of the reasons I do think that it's going to happen is it's not for the fact of having like a fear of, well, I don't know how to use this technology. The really great DPs are the ones who say, oh, I really want to try that. I want to see what I can do with that. That'd be incredible. Yeah. And this guy seems like that's the type of guy. So, Steph, you hear this news. Is this you excited about this?
Yeah, first and foremost, Asians represent, stand up, make noise. If we get more Asians in Star Wars, I'm a happy Asian girl. And then also his background totally would make sense. Like, this makes me really excited for it. And I will say this, that Asians usually are very good at technology. And if he's been working outside of South Korea, South Korea is always, when we were on 4K, they were on 7K. So I'm sure he's pretty, I'm sure he's pretty familiar with high tech equipment and excited to use it, like you were saying, Christian, because the best are.
This is great. This is great news. And again, nothing's confirmed, but I think this turns out to be true. And Mike, it was the original from.
Yeah. I just saw that on my thing here,
which is even more exciting. And you know, this is great. I wonder if Deborah Chow and Chung have worked together before. Even if they have not, Deborah Chow, like, really, really blew me away with The Mandalorian. Her episodes were just out of control. I was bummed that she wasn't coming back for Mandalorian season 2, but obviously the reason why is because she's prepping for this show and she's doing the entire
series. A little bit on her plate there,
dude, but she's doing the whole series. I love the fact that this
I'll
is
I'll tell
even,
you this
yeah
looking at his filmography too, like, it didn't get a lot of love, but Hotel Artemis, that was a cool little action flick. But it was
Is that the one with Jodie Foster?
Yeah, and the whole
I didn't like the movie.
Like a nurse and like a
I didn't like the story, but I agree.
It looked great.
It looked cool.
It had that great John Wick-y type of like seeped in neon and rain. And so yeah, he's got a great eye, that guy.
Yeah, and I just think just going back to Deborah Chow, what's cool about that is Mandalorian has been my favorite thing to come out of Star Wars in 25, 30 plus years. But so there have been so many great directors that have worked with it, and it's been cool to watch different directors take, you know, the producer's vision and essentially what the original trilogy did also. But
yeah,
the idea of someone who's already directed two episodes of that show. Now, I think that Obi-Wan is what, six episodes, seven episodes? It's short.
Seven, I believe.
So let's call this a 4 to 6 hour movie. Because if the episodes are 35, 40 minutes, which seems like
it's all her. So
that's what I'm excited about. This is her story. This is her taking this story and taking her vision and putting it into a extended 4 to 5 hour movie. And this is why I am loving the fact that they're doing this on television and not the big screen.
Yeah, me too. It also is just such a good indication that they're picking people correctly. You know, like, people forget when The Mandalorian started, everyone liked it. Everyone liked each and every episode, but the hype got so much bigger after Deborah Chow's episode. That's when it started exploding on Twitter. She was trending. She was the first director's name who was trending, I believe, in the first season of Mandalorian. Wow. I hadn't even been aware of her, but she like created a big wave because she really knew what she was doing.
She did. And what I like about her, she's a student of the game. And I don't just mean filmmaking. I'm talking about Star Wars, where you see her. It's a look in someone's eyes when, and not just with Star Wars per se, but with anything in general, when they're talking to you and they're listening and they're learning, and people who talk to just talk sometimes, they're not listening. It's one of the things that I have, my biggest problem with interviews is when people are interviewing like celebrities at like a junket and they're sitting there and they're listening to the person. They go, oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So anyway, and they don't hear anything that the person says. Deborah Chow was locked in to everything that Filoni and Favreau were saying. And then when it was her time to say something, she just said, like, dropping knowledge. And the fact that she's dropping knowledge by talking about what she was learning and what she was learning more so about the evolution of what inspired Lucas and what she wanted to add to it and how she added those characters.
She's a Jedi.
Absolutely. And she takes, and she knows, and she understands that Filoni was taught by Yoda, you know, and now she is part of the Jedi Council, if you will. And she's, and she's listening, and she's becoming a Jedi Master. I love it. This is one of the main reasons that the Obi-Wan series to me is the thing I'm looking forward to. I can't wait to see what she does. I love her. I absolutely love her. I cannot wait to see what she's going to do with the series.
It's interesting too, because I'm looking at these things and we're talking Disney, and we got, of course, Marvel thrown in there in the same company now. And WandaVision is all one director.
Is it really?
I'm just looking that up. And then also Winter Soldier is one director.
Huh.
And it's all these smaller seasons.
Smart.
Like, I think maybe they learned, maybe they figured after the first season of Mandalorian, like, you know, it works better. We get one director.
Well, but Mandalorian had a ton of different directors in both season one and season two.
I know. So I'm just curious.
But they had basically the same writer. Didn't Jon Favreau wrote? Yeah. So
Tavron Filoni.
Very curious.
Yeah.
I think that, that they had a few different writers on some of them, but that's the difference. That's the thing that I am always for. Like, look, here's the, and this is what, if you look at the MCU, it was, you have the writers and then Feige saying, okay, look, this is the direction we need to do.
Right.
We want to get someone's point of view and vision, but we have a story we're trying to tell. We obviously want to hear some creative input from who we're bringing in to say, like let's take Ryan Coogler, for example.
Yeah.
Ryan Coogler, when he takes the Black Panther movie, he's like, well, look, we need it to tie in this way with Wakanda and this and this and that. And Ryan Coogler's like, absolutely. What if we do this, 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 and this? And they go, great. That particular thing doesn't necessarily work with the timeline. So can we switch it to this? great. And that's what Mandalorian has done and will continue to do, but they're collaborative with their filmmakers. And you look at it, this is the Bryce Dallas Howard, what she was saying is how much fun they have when they're making this show. And that is why I believe that you can have different directors, but you should be on the same page. It's why it's some of the issues that I had with the new films is that I just didn't think that there was no collaborative efforts on all three of them. And again, this is not a bashing thing. I just believe that's why it didn't flow as seamlessly as, say, like The Mandalorian does. So all right, let's move on over. And there's some more stuff going on here, I see all your super chats that are coming in. We're going to take your questions, and I'm taking screenshots of them, and we're going to answer them as soon as we and if there's some silly ones in there, I'm just letting you know. I'm going to go over it real quick and then get rid of it. So I saw your silly question, it was funny, but not going to spend too much time on it. All right, let us go to this one. So Ludwig Göransson was nominated for the Mandalorian score by Society of Composers and Lyricists Awards. I think they also got some Golden Globe nominations this morning. Did it get nominated for Best Series?
I believe it did. Yes, it did. Let me double check that right now because I saw that about an hour ago.
Yeah, I don't know.
I believe it did because Pedro Pascal was tweeting out congrats to everybody.
Awesome. I don't know if it's gonna win. I just can't imagine.
But
I would love to see it. It would be such a win. But the fact that
best drama television series. Yep.
I think he's got a shot to win some composer stuff though. That
agreed.
This music that he's done, it's so like you play that music and people know it. It's one of those things now that it is, and I remember when it first came out, when it first started, I said to myself, okay, I'm getting like the initial one, the da-dun, da-da-dun, da-da, that's been phenomenal since the beginning. Then there's one part of it that kind of kicks into a Rocky type of thing, and people had to get used to that part. But then it became so awesome that because people forget that he scored Creed, so you can hear it in there. You know, you can absolutely hear his similarity of and that's any composer. If you listen to John Williams, if you listen to Hans Zimmer or John Bryan, and any of these, if you listen to their music enough, you'll pick up parts here. Like I remember listening to some James Horner stuff. James Horner did both Legends of the Fall and Titanic and Braveheart. You can hear mixtures and moments of that.
Yeah, sure.
Because that's his style. And Ludwig has absolutely done that and incorporated that. But watching him, he's brilliant. I hope he wins. I don't know if he will, but I hope he does. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think what he did was phenomenal. I think really great composers, you know, the music kind of blends and you don't really notice it. It just keeps the plot moving forward. But the best, and Star Wars has seen a handful, is when the music, you notice it and it enhances it and it changes the entire, it creates the vibe that you're about to watch. And I think Star Wars, since it is a space show, it's a fine line between, you know, corny and super serious. And I think music is the part that binds that together. And he made it like created this whole world and it's just a bop. You know, I like play the music in background all the time.
It's really good. There's a composer that a lot of hardcore Star Wars fans know, Samuel Kim, who's on YouTube. And if you haven't checked him out, you should. He does these great versions of Star Wars in general. He does a lot of really good Mandalorian ones, but he does like this medieval stuff. And he's got a medieval like Sith version that I just wish that we could use on this show. And I love David B's theme song. It was incredible. But there, Sam Kim has this medieval thing also that's really great. If you haven't checked out Sam Kim, you should. All right. Let's move on. We're going to do this last story. And then after we do this story, we're going to take your questions. We've seen quite a lot of the super chats come in, so I want to make sure we don't miss them. And this is the last story that we will cover here today. And this is, once Steph mentioned it earlier about Alan Tudyk, he tells Entertainment Tonight that he will be back at K2SO at some point in Star Wars Andor. So I'm sure people lost their minds when he said, I'm not going to be in it soon. Like, oh, wait a minute, why am I watching the best character in it? Why am I watching this show? And they're like, dude, don't tell anybody you're not in it yet. Right? Yeah. And so his quote was, I'm coming back at some point. I was there at the first announcement at D23. And at that point, the story hadn't been formalized yet. So now it has been. And even though I was announced at the beginning and every announcement I saw had me involved, I'm not involved currently. I will be involved at some later date. He'll be back at some point, and I look forward to it. So, look, what I gather from this is that they are paying attention to the timeline that they set up in other things. And in the timeline from the comic books that they announced, K2SO meets and or a little bit closer to the moments in Rogue One. So at the time we're going to be introduced to him in the series, they haven't met yet. And I think that that's another thing going back to what we just talked about when Hayden shows up. When Hayden shows up, people are going to lose their minds. When K2SO finally shows up and we meet him for the first time through Andor's eyes, we're like, oh, there he is. So that's, I think it's a smart move. Steph, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a smart move, although I was excited about K2SO and I love the relationship. And when they like brought him out, I just got my mindset on that kind of story being told. But now that I realize it's not, I'm just like recalibrating to understand what could possibly happen. But I think it still will be good. And I think it gives more space to explore other things that are not as friendly in this time.
Mike?
Yeah, I mean, being that he's a reprogrammed droid, you know, that whole thing is there, you know, to see, do we find him before? You know, do they have interactions where he was, you know, before the Empire? And how they decide, well, this would be a great droid, you know, on our side and reprogramming and that stuff. So there's good story elements there. And there's, you know, I'm always about the story. Does it fit the story? I don't want fan service, you know? And I think that seems like in his original talks was like, you know, it's like, I'm not in this, you know. And I think there's so many actors too that are good about stuff like that. Like, yeah, I'll come back if the story necessitates me to. I'm not coming back just to put me in it. You know, I think we see a lot of that with the droids. R2 and 3PO are always popping up for, you know, whatever reason.
I loved R2 popping up.
I know you did. I didn't.
But I love.
He didn't need. He could have stayed with the ship. Watch the ship, R2.
He's open. How do you think Luke's opening up? Not just opening up with the Force. He still had to take the elevator, and R2's able to program the stuff. Come on, R2-D2 is the reason why we have this story in the first place, okay. Jack.
Yeah, right. What happened to him? Why did he just sit there and the whole time with that damn map in his thing and finally comes awake finally at the end? Like, okay, now you're going to come awake.
I'm not going to argue with anything that you just said, but we're talking about different things here.
I know. All right.
Yeah, this one's different, I do think, because, you know, this is going to be the height of the Empire. Yeah. So we don't really need him yet.
I don't know. I mean, he's involved. He's involved.
No, I mean, I love the two of them together. I think they're dynamic. Just in his off the cuff, you know, his delivery, line delivery as an actor is so damn good. Like, it's a crime not to use him. But I think they probably, like he said, originally wasn't in it. And now the story is evolving and he is.
Right.
I think they realize, like, okay, we've got a way to put him in that's not just let's stick him in there. Now we have an organic way in the story.
Right.
Now it makes sense.
Yes.
As stories develop, you know?
Steph was talking about K2, so I was talking about R2. But yes, absolutely. Oh. Yeah. All right. Let's get to some of these questions. So Yo Brio, the hate I see online for Kathleen Kennedy is superb. No, I don't know about that. But do you think Sith series will be awesome? Because ironically, that's the story I'm craving. I think that you're talking about the Acolyte, right? So we don't know how much of we know that it's definitely dark side. We know that it's dark side. How much, and because it's a High Republic show. And it takes place, whatever, 200 or 300 years before.
200 years ago, yeah.
200 years ago, whatever. So and at that point, the Sith are still in the shadows. So it would be great to see that it is a Sith story and that the Sith are starting to go behind the scenes and do things. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do it. I'm actually really excited for that one. That's one that I want to hear a little bit more. Yeah. So how about you guys? Is that one on your radar yet, or you want to hear more about it?
The Acolyte?
Yeah.
It'd be on the lower end of my spectrum as far as right now.
Steph?
Yeah, same. I just don't know enough about it to really get invested, and there's ones that I'm more invested in right now.
You know what's so funny about that? I think that you guys actually represent a lot of people with that, and then people, a lot of people will say, well, why aren't they taking more risks? Why aren't they taking more risks and doing things outside the box? And because people, because the, and I'm not taking anything away from you guys for saying what you did, but it's like, because people aren't familiar with it, and you won't ever know if people are going to get excited about it unless you take the shot. And so, you know what I mean? Like, because there, this is also a possibility. You guys don't know enough about High Republic yet. We all don't really know a lot about
it. Yeah. I'm not like right. I'm reading the book. And so I'm learning more and more, and I am getting more intrigued. So I am curious how I would answer this question once I finish, once we get a better understanding of the villain being presented.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. It's funny. You make a good point, because I'm with the High Republic comic. It's very much feels Phantom Menace-y to me right now.
Yeah.
It's very still, everything is clean and pristine, and the Jedi Knights. And I am one of these people that I want a Star Wars that's not like Star Wars we've ever seen. And I was thinking about this the other day, because I got into a kind of debates about Justice League coming out, and it's R-rated. Like, I would love an R-rated Star Wars show that is adult, like an adult Star Wars. I'm not talking sex and nudity, but I am. Netflix Daredevil.
You're looking at Game of Thrones. You're looking at Game of Thrones for Star Wars.
Yeah, I am.
You're never going to get that.
Back. I know I'm not. Right. I know, but I'm just saying.
You can get darker, and maybe that's what the Acolyte's going to do. Maybe they're going to take your shot with getting a little darker. I don't think you're ever going to see rated R. And to be honest, and I'm always the one screaming from the hill to do rated R things, I don't think Star Wars needs to be rated R, but I don't think it necessarily has to.
I think
Mandalorian actually gets more into that adult kind of serious stuff too.
Yeah.
There's some, you know, when you look at the Horatio Sands stuff and certain things, there's some fun, silly moments, but it can get Disney dark.
And it's never doing that. But to say that it could, and I think it could work. And it's, again, it's this massive sandbox. We got 10 shows announced. We got droids and stuff and all those little, you know, the kids shows, but have that show for just the adults, you know, have that show this is something my kids aren't, I'm not letting my kids watch this till they're older. I was like, I know we're not going to get that with Star Wars, but I would be all for it.
I think that they can go. I think that I agree with you in a certain aspect, not the rated R thing, but I would like to see them. I still would, just hoping by putting it out there every week that it'll happen, that they adapt the James Luceno Darth Plagueis novel into a miniseries. And you watch the rise of Palpatine, but you see what Darth Plagueis did. It is, that book is a gangster story. And I think that they could do a gangster story and a dark story inside the world of Star Wars. And it could work, because when you explore a little bit more on the dark in Mandalorian, it works and people understand. So I think that they will do, not necessarily that story that I want to see, but I think that they will play now because of television. Movies, it was tougher. Movies, you need everyone to buy your ticket. Everyone's got to buy.
You got to get the four quadrants. You got to hit it all.
That's right. And you got to get people. And when you're doing movies, it's like, well, listen, we got to get the movies. We got to get people out there to want to buy the tickets. So let's make it a little bit more for the kids, as opposed to, well, they're already subscribed on Disney Plus. So they're going to get one a little bit more for the kids. They don't have to watch this one, but this is for the ones who are still, they're already subscribed. And for people who don't think we're going this realm, they're going to subscribe. And for the people who want more of the animated version, well, we got Bad Batch. People who want a little bit more of a lighter version, we have this. So that's why television can really benefit Star Wars in general. And I think that they could take the shots. I think they will take the shots. We'll have to find out. All right, here's the next one. Barrack Maine, do you think Visions is a result of fan support for Star Wars anime edits like the ones done by Scoundrel Media? Are you excited for a Star Wars anime? I have to be honest, I don't know enough about this. I don't know if you guys do. I haven't really paid much attention to it, but as far as being excited for a Star Wars anime, I will tell you that anime is not necessarily my thing, but I get excited for it because I know a lot of people do get excited for anime, and I know that that's another way to expand the Star Wars medium to get more people excited about it. So I'm excited about it in the fact that it looks like other people will want to do it or want to watch it. Excuse me. So. Are you guys anime? Are you guys?
It's funny you said that, because I just did a post the other day asking people if there's like a medium, a genre, something out there that you just cannot get into. And for me, it's anime. I cannot get into that medium at all. They've even done stuff where they take the DC characters and it's done through anime. And even that, for me, I'm like, nope, it just doesn't work for me.
Somewhere Emma Fife just woke up in a cold sweat.
I know.
I am. I've listened to this slander long enough, boys.
Fair enough.
I can't get it. I grew up on anime. They tell the deep side of stories for kids. Like, if you want to talk about darkness, anime gets dark
yeah.
all the time in their shows. So I just think this is an awesome way to explore the Star Wars galaxy in this version. My only fear is that I hope they stay true to anime and don't Disney-fy the anime. Like, I want like Studio Ghibli, like that type of view on it. I don't want them to kind like wide it down. Yeah. If that makes yeah, sense.
That makes sense. All right, here's the next one. Day Nap Man. Oh, I'm jealous. What do you think about a show that explores the planets and animals on them, similar to David Attenborough shows? Who in Star Wars can narrate? a lot of fun, actually.
I love that.
I love that idea.
Holy crap, is that phenomenal? Wait,
can we all re-narrate it, though?
Like, it's a real show?
Yeah, and the planets and the creatures? That's brilliant.
Dude,
that's brilliant. It would be like you and you could essentially take the novel or the encyclopedias that they have, you know, the visual dictionaries, and you could do stuff like that. And but you could like, and now we explore the planet of Tatooine.
What if they did it on the Oculus?
Notice the Minox traveling in.
You walk through it.
You would never see it.
Next scene, we are watching Minox. Watches the male Minox. Flaps its wings and attaches its tentacles to the female man. Why not?
Put on your coats now. We are in Hoth. Oh, watch out for that wampa. Yeah, it's be incredible. So you know, and speaking of the Oculus, did I tell you that I was
Oculus? Jesus, I picture you in your house just swinging your arms widely around.
I have it all set up in my office now. But I tell you that I almost missed a Schmodown meeting because I was playing mini golf in a medieval castle.
God,
unreal.
Great.
All right, what a setup.
Yep, pretty good. It's really good. What's the next one? We did that one. That one's really good. I like that. That was a great.
That's a brilliant idea, man. You need to.
Yeah.
It really pitch is. That. Please pitch that. All right. Here's the next one. Will we see Purge Troopers in Obi-Wan? Possible. I mean, it's absolutely possible that we will see Purge Troopers, and I think that, you know, it's only 8 years after Revenge of the Sith. So he's going to be on the run. He's going to be trying to protect himself, and he's going to be trying to, you know, do everything that he can to shut himself off. And I think there's going to be a lot more than like just him sitting around getting old in a desert.
Yeah, no, I think he's going to have a fight with the Inquisitor. So I think that they would have, I do think that there could be Purge Troopers on site. Like, I don't know, Vader trying to track him and them trying to give away his location. So, I don't know, something like that.
Mike?
I don't know. They've got a limited amount of time. You get 6 episodes to cover what they need to cover or what the story they're going to tell. So I don't know. I've never been very good at picking bets like that. It's like, who does someone going to show up? Because I'm always usually wrong. So I'll stick out this one out.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Here's the next one. This is the stupid one. Ara Akram. Hey, Al Chris, I need to know, are you the one who fart bombed Fernandez with Kathy Kennedy at the TLJ premiere? So Fernandez is an idiot. That's all I'll say.
What happened?
Nothing. He said, did someone fart bomb him? He's an idiot. All right. Let's see. This is what I'm doing. Silliness, but fun yet. All right. Next one here that we have. Younger Dryas, what do you guys think about Disney doing a film or series set 300 or 400 years in the future with Master Grogu rebuilding the Jedi Order, teaching about Luke? It'd be fun. But the question is, like, how? I don't know, like, how do they evolve that? They can't just like, it can't just be announced like tomorrow and be like, oh yeah, and then he's going to be 400 years old and he's going to start teaching about the Jedi. It's got to evolve a little bit more. But this goes back to the Filoni stuff. It's like anything is possible. What do you guys think?
I mean,
idea?
It would be like, I don't, we know him as Grogu can barely, he doesn't speak. So for me to like think of him running the entire place, being the man, that's hard for my mind to go there, but anything is possible.
Yeah. I mean, Yoda was a baby once.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know, Mike, do you like, you probably don't like this idea at all.
I don't know. I mean, because I know some things and happens and whatnot, and there will eventually be in 400 years from now, they'll bring some Solo into this TV series. You're like, 400 years later, we're still talking about Solo. Okay. Like, if you're going to do it, let's do a completely new thing without any ties to anything we've seen before. Skywalker, of course, kind of would be like, you know, that is a character that would transcend that long, but you know, we don't need, you know, Wedge Antilles' great ancestor popping up, you flying by in a ship or something.
No, it's true. I mean, I don't know how they're gonna. I would like to see a
but series. Future Star Wars, that brings an interesting point. Yeah. Like, you know, just from a design wise, what is Star Wars 400 years from now?
That's right. And I don't know if they want to explore that yet.
That's a big jump.
Just a reminder, real quick, everybody, that right after this, myself and Steph are going to be doing an after show on stereo.com/Christian Harloff. I'm about 1500 followers right now. I'd love to get to 2000 by the end of the week if you guys are able to. Stereo.com, it is a great app. If you don't know already, it is a great way to interact with people that you like, and meaning that Steph and I will be on and you guys can ask audio questions and you'll be on there. And it's like, so you can, anything that we're just doing strictly Star Wars today. So I know a lot of people are asking like Schmodown questions and everything too. That'll be a little later on. And Brett and I are doing one at 12. It's just kind of purely comedy, but Steph and I will be on doing Star Wars and you guys can just, you send in a voicemail. Like, hey, what do you guys think about Deborah Chow doing another series after Star Wars? And then we'll hear your voice and we can respond to you. It's a great app and it's free.
Why do you guys think that they didn't do the app where it's just one person?
I think that the whole
like
point,
Christian, let's say like Steph and I weren't there. Like you was like, hey guys, I'm going to continue this conversation at Stereo by myself. Let's talk.
Well, so the way that they do it, because it's an interactive thing, they want to have like an interactive podcast between two people, but gotcha. You can do something if you wanted to, like say Shannon signs up and you could have her in the other room. She can just put hers on mute.
Gotcha.
And you can just, that's how I did to start. I just did like one by myself, but then it's a lot more fun to just go back and forth with somebody and have a conversation. So gotcha. Anyway, just go to stereo.com/Christian Harloff. Please head on over there and myself and Steph will be over. And then once Steph and I are there, you can follow Steph when we're doing our conversation. But here's the next one. We're going to try to get to as many as we can by the time we get to 10. Hey, Darth, how do you guys think Qui-Gon could fit into the Kenobi series? Specifically, chances of Chow bringing back Liam Neeson for some badass pre-Clone Wars flashbacks with a younger Obi-Wan. I don't think you get flashbacks. I think he's going to show up as a Force ghost because we know he's the guy and he's the one. And they've already set it up. And I always bring reference to the certain point of view book that there's two of them. But in the first one, Claudia Gray talks about how in that scene in New Hope, Obi-Wan is talking to Qui-Gon already. He's already talking to him and knows that he's there. So at some point he's got to appear to him. And Yoda told him, go to Tatooine, go there, try to connect. He's going to show. So we saw the setup. So I think we're going to see it. What do you guys think?
I think we're definitely going to see him and he's going to teach him how to become a Force ghost.
I think they're also saving the flashback for him and Anakin. I don't think they're going to do flashbacks with him and Liam. I think they're going to stick to flashbacks. I think they're going to be limited. I think it's going to be him and Anakin. Flashbacks.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree. All right, here's the next one. Major Zuma, love the show. Thank you so much. Did you guys go over Light of the Jedi? Sorry if you already did. I love the book. Steph has been going through it. And Steph, what's your thoughts thus far? How far are you?
I'm about one third away into it. So it's like basically broken down into three parts, essentially, is what I'm getting. And the first part is like setting up the disaster itself that leads into the entire entire book. But I'm loving it. It's delivering what it's promised, you know? It's like, and it, I know that some people are like, oh, how can this be interesting? Because we don't have like the Sith present yet, but the Vikings that are supposedly going to be showing up are a really sick concept. And I like to see how we know what happens with the Jedi. So it is very interesting to see what led to that demise. And that's what I'm loving right now is that like that focus where you're like, oh, this is too good to be true.
Well, Claudia Gray's book also did come out. So you got two of them out there now. Tom Hanks, thoughts on Pablo's comments on Star Wars Theory? Now, you know, look, Star Wars Theory is a friend, and I'm looking forward to having him on this show. We're going to talk Star Wars stuff, but all that stuff was on Twitter. People talked about it. It's an old thing, but like, now I look forward to having him on, man. I'm going to talk Star Wars Theory and I, we've been talking for a bit and I definitely want to get him on this show. So I'm excited to have him on. All right, let's get to the next one here. We got a couple left. And I'm going to try to get to all of them. B. Skywalker, love Sith Council. Thank you so much. Have you read any of the new Star Wars High Republic books or comics? If so, any good? Steph just went over the book. Mike has read the first issue.
I did the second last night.
How was it?
It's good. It, again, like I said a little bit earlier, it's very, we're supposed to be, you know, 200 years before what we're dealing with current, yeah. But it strikes me as very, very prequels. It's very, the aesthetic is very much the same. It's very clean. It's like kind of what I said when we were talking about, like, going 400 years in the future, what would happen? So it strikes me like the prequel comics that came around the prequels back in the 2000s, this feels very much like that. Okay. But there's some great stuff. We're finding out the origin of Bacta and where that came from. That just set up in this series where there was a different type of kind of healing salve instead of Bacta. And this is all bringing Bacta into it. I don't know if it's the first time, but it's the first time I know that Bacta has been shown the origin of. That's what they're kind of on this mystery. It's a great mystery and it's great new characters. What I love about it, and like I say, there's no characters we know already. It's all these new characters, and that's what I'm loving so far. Two episodes. Mm-hmm. So I definitely recommend checking the comic out.
I love that too. Nitesh Soros, hey, with all these new announcements for Star Wars series and movies, how do you think they're going to tackle music for all that? Do you think we'll see Ludwig in other Star Wars projects? Any other names? I think you might see Ludwig potentially in the other ones in the Rebels one, not the Rebels, the
Bad Batch?
No, not the Bad Batch one. I can't remember any
Acolyte.
Nope, not the Acolyte. The one, the
Blue Squadron,
the High Republic, the Republic one.
There you go.
The Rangers of the New Republic. I think you'll see him potentially do that one. But I think that Kevin Kiner is going to come back and do some stuff for sure.
It's funny, we talked a little bit about Ludwig earlier. Like, to me, we've had composed John Williams is Star Wars for so long, and then the two voices that were brought in, John Powell and Giacchino, they really didn't create anything what I would think is memorable. And they're two phenomenal composers. I think Ludwig is the first one that's come in that's kind of made his stamp outside of Williams with
Kiner too.
It kind of, of course.
Yeah.
So I think I would love new voices. You know, it's kind of like with James Bond. You've got the classic Monty Norman and John Barry, like the Bond theme, but you know, David Arnold comes in and does his version of stuff. And it's like, they finally make their mark. I think Ludwig's done that. I would love to see some other composers come in and kind of, it's tough because you're living in the shadow of Williams, but
yeah. All right, let's get to this next one here. It's from Ryan Nichols. Thank you with a very generous super chat. Love the crew. Glad to see everyone, different perspectives. Thoughts of the plot for the Boba Fett show. I think that this is what Steph and I were talking about before. Maybe they change instead of going into that Crimson Dawn. They start to go. I think Cad Bane and bounty hunters that we've been curious about. I think this is where they show up. Steph.
Yeah, like Dengar, Embo, maybe Jazz. Yep. I think we could get all of those. And because you should just bring all the bounty hunters.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. So I think that's what it's going to be. I think it's going to be a bounty hunter show for sure. Ronan Unchained, hey all, do you guys hope the new shows are spaced out evenly release date wise? It's a critique of mine with the new films, including spinoffs. Well, I never had a problem with releases coming out. If you were going to space them out and put them out, you just had to put the right effort into it in the right time. Like, I never agreed with anybody when they said that two films a year couldn't work, because Marvel has proven that wrong. It's just a matter of how you do it and the release you do it. If it's rushed and forced, no pun intended, then it's not going to work. But with TV is very different. You're going to get one and maybe two a year, because they're going to be different timelines, but they're still going to tie in the things that we know. So it's a very interesting position that they're in. But do you guys have a...
And you got to remember, they're now part of Disney with Marvel, and they're not going to overlap with their Marvel stuff.
Right.
And they're doing so many TV shows with that. They're going to make it so there's always content by the company, but I think it's not going to be on top of each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, we got two more, and then Steph and I are going to do our show. You can meet us over at Stereo, and then obviously SEN is going to be going on also. Dagan S. Broad, awesome to see the good folks at Star Wars News Net sharing the link to Sith Council on their front page. Keep up the great work. Love this show. Thank you, Dagan. Yeah, they're phenomenal. I'm massive fans of those guys over there. Have been for a very long time, since I found them a long time ago. I'm excited to be working with them again, especially having a lot of them inside of the Schmodown. Last one is just a really nice donation by Yo Brio. So thank you, Yo. Appreciate that. And guys, that is the show. So I wanted to thank you all once again. Appreciate you for joining us. And we will see you guys in just a little bit. Myself and Steph, stereo.com/theschmodown. Get on over there right now, please. Join me. Join us.
Isn't it /Christian Harloff?
What did I say?
The Schmodown.
See, I'm so used to it. You're absolutely right. It's /Christian Harloff. It's exactly what it is. /Christian Harloff. Get on over there. Come join us, please. We're excited to talk with you, and we'll see you next time.